Today's podcast is also brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. What are you listening to after today's episode? How about a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up? Log on to www.audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast today for details.
Listen up, MuggleCast listeners. Summer is here, and what better time than now to say big at GoDaddy.com. Get your own shared hosting account with 150 gigs of storage, 1,500 gigs of bandwidth, and 500 email accounts for $6.64 per month when you sign up for 1 year. Plus, by entering code POTTER, that's P-O-T-T-E-R, you will receive an additional 20% off of any 1, 2, or 3 year shared hosting plan. Some restrictions apply. Check out the site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
This is Professor McGonagall welcoming you to all to MuggleCast, hoping you enjoyed. Dobby, come here. Dobby!
Yes, well, I'd just like to say how very pleased I am to introduce MuggleCast to all of you. Thank you.
Because, by the way, we're just days away from Portis in Dallas, Texas. This is MuggleCast, episode 152, for July 8th, 2008.
Well, Micah, after, you know, waiting so long, we finally got a nice, awesome batch of Half-Blood Prince pictures. Isn't that awesome? Did you check these out?
I actually did. I did check them out.
Yeah.
You would be impressed, because normally I just complain about these photos and say, hey, you know, let's get with the teaser trailer already. And you know what was surprising was I was walking out of work, I think it was. When was this article released? Was it on Thursday?
Well, the pictures came out, July 2nd, so we'll call that a...
Wednesday. Yeah.
Wednesday.
So I was walking out of work, and one of the guys that I used to work for turns to me and says, hey, did you see the article on the new movie in Half-Blood Prince?
Whoa.
And I said, no, or in USA Today, rather. And I said, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he's like, oh, well, you're some fan. And
you should have been like, well, I happen to be the news anchor on the most popular Harry Potter podcast online.
But no, he knows this, and you know, he's one of the people that likes to give me a hard time about it, but apparently he's an even bigger diehard fan than I am, having seen USA Today. But a lot of cool pictures, I actually will say. Not just a bunch of, you know, ones that we've been getting before that you can just toss in the trash. These are actually pretty good ones.
Right. Yeah, they're good. They're not like cut in half or just black and white or, you know, just mysteriously come out of nowhere. They exist. So we'll be talking about those today, and you know, we'll wonder now where does this leave us in terms of the teaser trailer. We got some hot tips on that this week, and we'll discuss that.
They're all false.
And they're all false? Ooh, okay. Ooh, well, I disagree with that, so that'll be a lively debate. And we got chapter by chapter, our final chapter discussion this week for Deathly Hallows. It's kind of sad.
It's kind of sad. Yeah.
I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Micah Tannenbaum, what's in the news this week?
Well, you talked about it a little bit before, the new Half-Blood Prince photos. And finally we get, in my opinion, a really good glimpse into what's been going on, as opposed to these, you know, kind of half-assed photos that have been coming out the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's about time. These are cool pictures. What was your favorite one? You said you were pretty happy with them.
I was pretty happy with them. To me, actually, the one of Luna looked a little bit fake. It looked like it was photoshopped with those glasses that she has.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah, it did.
They were awesome, though. I love the picture. It's just it's pretty cool. What else?
I like the one of Professor Slughorn, where they're all in the potions classroom. Hermione seems to be giving him a little bit of a dirty look there, to be honest with you.
No surprise, though. I mean, you know, Hermione's outsmarting Slughorn once again.
Yeah. But there really wasn't... I don't really think there was a bad one in the bunch.
No.
What do you think of Lavender Brown? She was in that picture with Slughorn. I remember you said she was hoping she was pretty cute. Are you happy with the outcome?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is she the one standing next to Neville, or is she the one behind Hermione?
Yeah, she's got the headband kind of thing going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she looks really good.
Yeah, she's cute. Mm-hmm. She's cute. So yeah, there's those pictures. Lauren, Matt, any pictures stand out to you guys?
I don't know. I'm kind of with Micah here. I'm glad to see that they've actually been filming a movie, because for the past couple of weeks I've been doubtful.
We have evidence of a film being made.
So yeah. I'm just relieved, frankly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Special effects with the goggles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the picture of Dumbledore. I think that's a really nice photo.
Yeah, you said that to me about Dumbledore.
His beard looks straighter. Or more straight,
it
rather.
It looks longer.
Yeah, it is longer. Well, he's aging.
It compensates for the rest of him, Laura.
Hey.
Oh.
You know what's interesting? You can't see his black hand.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. It's like, cool. It's not in the photo.
It's like they didn't want to pay for the CGI.
Now, what's with the shot of Harry and Hermione? If it wasn't snowing out, which is what it looks like is going on, I would say that it was probably after Dumbledore had died. But
Well, see, this is my favorite photo, actually, because I have this on my desktop. I don't really know what scene it depicts, and I don't even know if it's even going to be a shot in the film. It may be even cut, but I always like the Harry Hermione shots when it's just the two of them.
And this photo is so high res. I mean, I could almost look in the reflections of their eyes and see what they're looking at.
I can see the stubble from Dan Radcliffe, and I could see all the freckles on Hermione's face, on Emma Watson.
Yeah, really nice. Very nice picture.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what else could they be looking at besides Dumbledore's grave? But, I mean, doesn't school end in the summer months?
Yeah,
well, you know what? Maybe they're just standing by Dumbledore's grave after the funeral or something.
But it's winter in this picture. It's snowing. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. It's Harry and Hermione, so you may have...
I don't know.
Harry and Hermione kind of have just a little bit of a feud from the potions class, so maybe they're, like, talking about it or something.
Well, and I mean, I find that oftentimes what they tend to do in these movies is have the more intense conversations happen between Harry and Hermione while Ron is off doing something else, particularly since Ron is going to be so occupied with Lavender in this film.
And Quidditch.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were trying to foster some of the more serious plot points to be brought to the screen through conversations between Harry and Hermione. And it just so happens they always both look very concerned when they're talking to each other.
See, this kind of reminds me of the Harry and Hermione dialogue in Goblet of Fire when they talk about the egg.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, it's a really close-up shot.
Yeah.
And you can almost just sense that Hermione's going to say, "I'm scared for you."
But doesn't Ron get hurt at one point during this film? Or is that... I don't remember when exactly.
Well, he takes that love potion, that love spell.
Yeah, which is that picture.
Of him, like,
with the heart. I got this heart in my hand.
Yeah. He does look pretty good, though. I do like the reaction face he's got on.
It's definitely not a face we've seen from him, so it definitely looks not Ron-ish, if that makes any sense.
And Tom Felton, looking pretty nice there. The boyish haircut, with putting all his hair off to the side there. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Then there's this behind-the-scenes picture of David Yates, Dan Radcliffe, and Bonnie Wright. And David Yates is educating the actors of how to, you know, do a scene there. You can see Hedwig in the background, which is pretty cool. There's also that, if you look back behind David Yates, there's the picture of the burrow. A little, like, sketch of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
So. Well, I kind of want to go back to the Draco shot. Where do you think Draco what? Is?
Hmm.
I mean, I at first I thought it was Dumbledore's office in the climactic scene, but this is during the day. And that climactic scene happened at night, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like if you look at the lower left-hand corner, it looks like there's bottles. So it could be in Snape's office or even in the potions classroom.
Or even in the cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because of all the knickknacks and things in the back.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, you never know. You don't see much of Draco. That's why. I mean, there's only so many scenes this can be in, because you don't see much of Draco. He's just elusive.
Yeah. There were some other pictures also that we didn't get in high res, but they did show up online. There was a nice one of McGonagall approaching Harry in Dumbledore's office, it looked like.
Yeah, I really like that one, too. It just wasn't a high-res pic that we were talking about.
Oh, apparently I screwed up the news post on MuggleNet. That link doesn't work. It doesn't
have a picture of Luna. Oh, yeah, meant to tell you that.
I have the links backwards. Whoops. But, yeah, so do you think that's after Dumbledore already died?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
It makes sense.
But,
because, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, Harry's holding Dumbledore's wand. And Professor McGonagall is in the head of house. I mean, the head of Hogwarts. It's her office now.
Yeah, but she could still be in there.
But she's wearing all black. I mean, it has to be after this.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, just you look at the look on Harry's face and the fact that he's holding Dumbledore's wand. I mean, why would they both be in Dumbledore's office without Dumbledore?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, look at McGonagall now. I mean, Maggie Smith. She's looking different. She's looking a lot more careworn in this.
Well, I think she's supposed to be looking sad in the scene. I mean,
or probably stressed.
Yeah,
and everything. I mean, she just came back from a battle too.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the picture of Dumbledore's
coffin.
No, sorry, Dumbledore's portrait in his office. I can't wait to see.
Yeah,
that'll
be cool.
I want to see.
It should be Richard. It should be Richard Harris. Picture of Richard Harris, not. Wouldn't that be awesome if they did Richard Harris? It'd be kind of confusing.
Yeah,
though,
it would be kind of confusing.
Yeah, it would be. I mean,
well, maybe when they start their term at Hogwarts, they take the picture then. No, they don't.
No. Yeah. It still wouldn't make sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in other news, anything else to be said about the pictures, guys? Or is that it?
No, I think, this is very, very new pictures, too. Mm-hmm.
Just thank you, Warner Brothers, for showing us that we are getting a movie.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank
well,
you.
Like, there was this big surge, and, you know, I was hoping one of the articles that came out may, like, announce when the teaser trailer is coming, but none did.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and playback anywhere, just like MuggleCast. On the Summer Road Tour, the co-host and I listen to a few audiobooks from Audible to pass the time. It is a fantastic listening experience and is a great way to do some reading. Log on to www.audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to www.audiblepodcast.com/MuggleCast for your free audiobook.
In other news, we've heard that Half-Blood Prince is going to be opening with a big attack. And David Yates says this in an interview with Empire Magazine, I believe it is. Now, everyone may remember that back a few months ago, we reported that they were filming at Millennium Bridge. And David Yates said, we'll bring a major London landmark crashing down. Well, back in March, they were filming a bridge collapsing scene at Millennium Bridge in London. So that's probably what they were doing. I mean, this we got a lot of information about this scene. There were 60 crew members there, 120 extras. You know, they were walking on the bridge when it collapsed and all that. So I guess that'll be a cool way to open the movie, even though it doesn't go with the book.
Well, it kind of does. I mean, doesn't it sort of go along with everything that was going on prior to the beginning of the book, like with the whole other minister thing?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I can see, like, it opens with this unknown couple in their car or something, and they're just talking, and they're just driving through this this traffic-filled bridge, and then all of a sudden the bridge collapses and stuff.
Okay. Well, and then in other news, there were some trailer rumors this week, some more trailer rumors. Earlier in the week, I had gotten a couple emails from people saying, oh, yeah, it's going to be with The Dark Knight. Someone who works at an IMAX theater heard that they were going to be receiving their print delivery for Dark Knight. And then she said in the email giving us the date of arrival, they added that we could expect our Half-Blood Prince trailer for that print to arrive 2 days after. So, I mean, it's believable. And then a couple days later, we start getting these emails from two other people saying it's going to be with The Mummy. And apparently, one of the girls talked to a marketing representative at Warner Brothers, and they said it's coming with The Mummy. Apparently, Universal knows that The Mummy's going to suck, so they were pushing for Warner Brothers to give them the Half-Blood Prince trailer so that you know, they could get more ticket sales.
I hope not.
I don't know.
Because we have to wait for August now.
Yeah. What were we going to say, Laura?
I was going to say The Mummy does look like it's going to suck, so I certainly don't blame them for wanting that. But
plus, waiting till long.
At the same time, I agree with Matt. It's like, how long can they expect us to wait?
Well, it's also, you get the teaser trailer, then you wait a month and get the theatrical trailer, and then a month afterward, you pretty much have the movie.
Yeah. Right.
So that's a lot of promos. I mean, they don't really shoot their promos and TV spots until after the trailer. So, I mean, are they going to have, like, all this promos and TV spots and mini trailers and all this extra stuff in like a 2 to 3 months time?
Maybe they're doing a new experiment. See how marketing goes differently. If it affects ticket sales or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's got to have a nice fluidness with the advertising too. I really hope it's not The Mummy.
Yeah.
I'm just getting sick and tired of all this stuff, to be honest with you. I mean, how many weeks now have we...
I thought you were just excited about the pictures. What happened?
Well, I mean, the pictures are all great.
You're a flip-flopper.
No, you can like the pictures, but you still want the damn teaser trailer. I mean, how many times are we going to play this game here? Oh, it's coming out with Kung Fu Panda. Then it's coming
out with
Happy Feet. Then that came out a year ago.
Happy Feet?
Happy Feet?
A year ago? Yeah.
Now it's Dark Knight.
No, I see your point.
Have we thought it was first Speed Racer, Kung Fu Panda,
Prince Caspian,
Get Smart? Like,
yeah, I mean,
come on.
Andrew, how many movies have you deleted
guys,
from
this actually
the poll
marks,
on the homepage?
This marks the 2 month anniversary of us waiting for the trailer because this was the week of May 1st, or the first week of May.
That's
when
what
we thought it was
Caspian
Speed Racer.
Oh, Speed Racer. Okay, maybe we should just stop posting. I mean, someone emailed me that. They were like, you know what? It's not Warner Brothers' fault. It's your fault. You guys are the ones posting these rumors that aren't even true. Like, good point, sir. But I like causing
well, don't
the hype.
We do that in general.
Am I to blame?
We do post rumors, don't we?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah.
We're kind of in that business.
Yeah. Yes, we are. Fans like to hear it, too. I like to report it. I think it's fun. I think it's fun to mess with people. Give them lies.
Give them hope.
Yeah. Well, I always like posting them in hopes that actually does come true, because then it's like, yeah, we told you. So eventually we'll get it right.
if we announce it, that it's going to be in front of every single movie we're trying to get it right.
Portis is next week.
I'm so excited.
Who's excited? I'm excited.
I am so excited.
Raise your hand if you're excited.
Yeah.
Raising my hand. Excited. We will be in Dallas from Wednesday the 9th to Sunday the 13th. And Portis is from July 10th to the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an awesome time.
I will be there on
you can
the
still
10th.
Register it. Michael will be there on the 10th. Portis2008.org if you want to register. Also, we're going to have a little MuggleCast meetup on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
All attendees, please keep this in mind. MuggleCast meetup, Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. in the common room. If you forget, I'm sure you'll see one of us walking around. Just be like, hey, what time's the MuggleCast meetup? And we'll be like, 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday.
Yeah, you'll just run in the other direction.
I'll run in the other direction. I'll be like, no pictures. I haven't done my makeup. So the MuggleCast meetup will be 3 to 5 p.m. on Saturday. The podcast will be at midnight on Friday. So technically Saturday morning, but it's Friday night. And then at the very beginning of the Podcast Palooza, there is going to be a podcasting panel. One podcaster from each of the podcasts is going to be on this panel talking about podcasts. During the whole Podcast Palooza, we will be selling MuggleCast t-shirts. They're being printed as we speak. And should be getting them Tuesday.
They're really cool. Dude, have you ever talked about what they look like?
No, because we just got the design a couple days ago.
Should it be a surprise, or should we just?
Yeah, it'll be a surprise. No, we can't. Okay. Can
we just say the color?
You can look up. That's a variety of colors. It's going to be printed on a maroon t-shirt to match the Portis colors. It's going to be cool. I'm excited. So the shirts will be on sale at the Podcast Palooza, and we'll give a couple away at the meetup, and we'll also have MuggleNet stickers at the meetup. So fun time.
Yeah.
If you would like a day pass, if you just want to come Friday or Saturday, if you're in the Dallas area and just want to come to, say, the MuggleCast meetup, you can buy a day pass for Friday or Saturday. Mm-hmm. If you buy a day pass for Saturday, you can also go to the ball and then all the Jim Dale stuff that they have to offer.
Yeah. And it's not too late. If you really want to come to Portis, you still have time.
Portis2008.org for all of the details.
Mm-hmm. They've updated their forms too to answer a lot of your questions if you have any, you know, problems getting a room or, you know, just rooming with somebody.
Yeah, if you have a question, go to portis2008.org. You can go to the message boards, like Matt said, and they will get back to you really quick on there.
Mm-hmm. They're a really great group. I mean, they're really on top of it right
now.
Yeah,
they are, definitely. All right, well, that's that. And final announcement for today, Podcast Alley. Don't forget to vote for us because it is a new month. Happy 4th of July, everyone, by the way. Michael, what did you do for 4th of July?
Did you see the fireworks? No, I hung out. I watched a little bit of baseball, took the day off, no work. It was great not having to go into work.
Cool.
Just chilling out. Not very exciting, I know,
outside?
But... Was it busy outside?
No.
Well, you know, I live 3 blocks from the beach, so there's a lot of people that that set off fireworks, think, you know, that they're experts, but they really they aren't. But you know, you can see a couple here and there, and then I watched the Macy's and the Boston Pops on TV. So
there you go. Sounds like a good time. But anyway, we are number 5 on Podcast Alley right now, so just number 5. So feel free to vote for us at podcastalley.com. Mm-hmm. Just one vote a month keeps us on the top 10 list. Let's move on to Muggle Mail this week.
Our first Muggle Mail comes from Chris, 22, of Westchester, New York. Chris writes, "Hey guys, I've been listening to MuggleCast since it first debuted, and I love you guys. I just wanted to point out a connection you may have missed from episode 151. In Prisoner of Azkaban, on page 427, after Harry thinks he sees his father conjure Patronus, when it was his future self, Dumbledore tells Harry, 'You think that we don't recall them more clearly than ever in times of great trouble?' It seems Joe is trying to tell us that people who've died live on within us, and they speak to us in different times. This connects perfectly with the 'Is this happening in my head?' quote. Looking at both these quotes, I think Joe is trying to tell us the Dumbledore at King's Cross is a manifestation of the real Dumbledore living within Harry. So it's happening within Harry's head, but it's still real because Dumbledore lives on in Harry. This is actually quite brilliant from an author's perspective, too. This means that Joe's readers don't necessarily have to believe in an afterlife to realize that Dumbledore truly was with Harry at that moment. A nice thought, no? I just thought you guys might appreciate this. Sincerely, Chris."
That's perfect. I actually really like that. That's great.
Yep. Yeah. We actually got a few emails like that. People pointed that out, which was really cool that people can actually remember that. And it works perfectly. So makes perfect sense.
Talking about an afterlife in the Harry Potter series is always a great subject to discuss, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Like with the veil. And with, you know, just basically an afterlife in the wizarding world, if there is one.
Right. How about the next email?
Yeah, I'll do it. All right, the next one comes from Allison, age 18, of Chicago, Illinois. Firstly, I would like to say that I adore the show and that thanks to you guys, it is total OMG-ness that you started a podcast for Twilight. Anyway, after listening to episode number 151, I thought that Godric's Hollow would have been another good setting for chapter 34 because it is where Harry was born and the place that began his destiny as Harry Potter. Just like you all mentioned that Harry was given a choice, Harry would have either been choosing to die at the place where his parents too had died to or live and accept all the things that had happened to him and the person that he has become from the night that Voldemort gave Harry the scar.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that. Maybe we should clarify when she's talking about that, she's discussing like other places in the Wizarding World that would serve as a good location for exemplifying being able to move on with death or choosing to live. Okay.
I think that's cool. Yeah. I still like Matt's choice from last week being the veil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Especially since we never learned anything about it.
That's basically what happened to me.
Anyway.
We bring that up like every show.
It ticks me up a little bit.
Well, okay, let me just vent here for like 2 seconds. Didn't I devote like 3 episodes worth of discussion the Department of Mysteries because I was convinced and then we didn't learn anything?
That was an awesome 3-part series though. That was awesome. And the final email, Micah.
Final email comes from Rose20 of Philadelphia, talking about the wizard drinking age. She says, I don't think there's a specific age where they're allowed to drink alcohol, but I think it's understood that some things are appropriate later in life. In Order of the Phoenix, when the trio goes to the Hogshead for the first DA meeting, Ron comments that he thinks the barman, Aberforth, would serve them anything and that he wants to try fire whiskey, and Hermione goes, you are a prefect, to dissuade him. Butterbeer is probably okay because it's so mild, but drinking something more hardcore would be unbecoming of a prefect, but not illegal. Love the show.
Yeah. Yeah, but he says he bets that he will allow him to get that means that he's not really allowed to, by wizarding law, to sell fire whiskey to a prefect.
Well, it's just a little clarification.
No, I kind of agree with Matt. I think Ron bets that he'll get any sort of alcohol from Aberforth probably just because he's a really shady character. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of a really shady place, and he can probably swing some, you know, hardcore alcohol if he wanted to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what a bunch of teens, I mean, I don't know about girls, but a lot of teen boys like to do, you know. It's like, I wonder, you know, if this guy's really cool and he'll allow me to get a beer or something. Yeah. I agree with you, Micah.
I think there's, but I agree with what they're saying though too, in that there's probably not a specific age.
No, there probably isn't. Do you think it might just be, you know, just by the owner of the bar and how they, you know, want to sell it to?
Could be.
Because like in the Prisoner of Azkaban, I know in the film they have it. I don't know about the book. Well, it's probably because, you know, the talking heads weren't in the book. But when the talking head said, no underage wizards allowed today. So do you think, like, certain days underage wizards are allowed to be in and others they're not because they sell certain kinds of
butterbeers
or something?
Yeah, that makes some sense.
All right, it's time now for Chapter by Chapter. This week we are discussing the final chapter in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. You know, I kind of hate saying... Do you guys count the epilogue as a chapter?
Can I clarify? It's Hallows, not Hollows.
Hallows. Deathly Hallows. Finally, after like 36 chapter by chapters, I say it right.
You should get it
Hallows.
Right. Hallows.
Well, I always was going to like put a little post-it note on my screen, but like I used to say Hollows all the time.
Yeah, I remember that. We corrected you like 5 times.
No, I mean, I had to use the word Hallows. Anyway, whatever. I'm screwed up again now. But anyway, do you guys count the epilogue as a chapter? Or is it just like there? You know what I mean?
Well, it's not really a chapter because it's an epilogue. I mean, it's not even labeled as a chapter in the book. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Should we do epilogue by epilogue in next week?
Yeah, that'll be like a one-episode series, but sure.
Exactly. And if you love it or you hate it, it doesn't matter because it's only one.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it would be nice if we discussed the epilogue a little bit next week at Portis. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long of a discussion we'd need to go over the epilogue, but...
Well, this chapter starts off with Harry awakening at the scene where he expected to be killed by Voldemort, though he does not show that he's alive. So he listens and watches and gathers that Voldemort also collapsed and was unconscious, just like Harry. So, moving off of this, why hasn't anyone ever really talked about, after Harry got, you know, quote unquote killed, Voldemort actually got unconscious and knocked back too?
Yeah. Well, like, and it's described, someone even emailed this into us, too, when we were talking, so I was like, oh, cool, it wasn't just me who thought this. Voldemort also, like, seems to wake up from something.
Mm-hmm. Well, weren't they both at King's Cross?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Was that actually Voldemort
there? I don't think so.
When he woke up, was he like, whoa, I was just a little baby?
He probably got knocked back and knocked unconscious because, you know, Voldemort destroyed his own Horcrux.
And also, you have to
remember, and it was a living person.
The discussion that we had last week about the area they were in as being in the eye of the beholder. So what Voldemort may have saw could have been completely different from what Harry saw.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously had no recollection of what Harry saw in Dumbledore.
No, I don't think he did. But I just wonder if that was actually Voldemort right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, a part of him died, pretty much. We don't know what part of Voldemort's soul was in Harry, too. It may have been a part of a Horcrux that affected him directly, Voldemort. That's probably why he probably passed out or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it says here in the book, the Death Eaters had been huddled around Voldemort, who seemed to have fallen to the ground. Something had happened when he had hit Harry with the killing curse. Had Voldemort too collapsed? It seemed like it. And both of them had fallen briefly unconscious, and both of them had now returned. So is Joe saying that, yeah, that was Voldemort right there?
I think so.
Well, see, I have a question about the whole, after Harry, you know, died and came back. Do you think this all happened after a certain length of time? Like, did, like, when Harry come back, did, like, a second pass, or did it take, like, 5 or 10 minutes of Harry discussing with Dumbledore? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Honestly, the impression that I got was the amount of, like, time. It was a different time span. It's comparable to Narnia, you know, where they go.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
Oh.
So do you think, like, when Harry woke, or when Harry was conscious again, like, a second has passed?
Yeah, because I think, because Bellatrix says to Voldemort right there, my lord, like, my what lord. Happened? So it seems like, you know, he hit Harry, it fired back, and then Bellatrix would just crouch down and say, my lord, even though it did say that there was a crowd of Death Eaters all around him.
Yeah, but, well, it seems like it's a reaction when when Bellatrix was saying, my lord, it seems like that just happened, and she's making a reaction to him fainting.
Yeah.
When they're actually dueling a little bit later on, when Harry tells him, like, I've seen what you'll be otherwise, I've always thought that, you know, that implied to me that they were both out for the same period of time. And so that was, in fact, Voldemort that he sees in King's Cross. You know, he's trying to get him to be remorseful. And, you know, I just thought that he was probably down for the same period of time that Harry was. Otherwise, they probably would have inspected him a lot earlier, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I agree, because it even mentions a couple of pages later, when Voldemort sends Narcissa to check and see if Harry's alive, Harry gets the distinct impression that something has happened to make Voldemort afraid of approaching him. So clearly, they were both out for the same amount of time, and while Harry was having his discussion with Dumbledore, Voldemort must have seen something that scared the living crap out of him.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So next, what happens is Voldemort says, okay, somebody check to see if he's alive. Narcissa goes down and asks Harry if Draco is still alive.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, you know, right before she asks him that, Harry knows, Harry feels Narcissa holding his heart.
Yeah.
And so he knows right off the bat that she knows he's alive.
So, yeah, so Narcissa could have easily said to Voldemort, oh my god, he's alive, he's still alive. Voldemort sucks. Mm-hmm. So, but, and then Harry says that, yeah, Draco is alive. And then Narcissa tells Voldemort that Harry is dead. Now, I realize Harry is in quite a crappy situation here. I mean, he has to talk, or otherwise Narcissa is going to be like, nope, he's alive. So if you think Narcissa said that, if she did say you were alive, do you think Voldemort would just shot the curse again And then what if Harry had actually died?
No, because Harry can, remember, well, as we go on in the chapter, when Narcissus says he's dead, he uses the Cruciatus curse on Harry, and Harry can't feel a thing.
Yeah, because he's
protected by the charm.
Elder Wand also.
Right. So basically, he's impermeable to Voldemort, is what I gathered.
It's just amazing how obsessed Narcissa is about making sure Draco's okay. Like, I understand the whole son thing, but, like, she just seems crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it is her child.
Yeah, I know, but
it's
still
a typical Malfoy thing, though. In it for yourself.
Yeah.
Malfoy Slytherin trait.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was really risky of Harry, even though he had no choice. Did anyone else think this, or...
If I was Harry, I would do the same thing he did.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree. No choice.
But, and then Narcissa basically spared him. So
she doesn't care. She does not care about Voldemort or anything.
Well,
she
that's kind of important because I guess not. I guess you're right.
She cares about her son. All she's been thinking about is her son. So has Lucius.
Mm.
And when she finds out that there is a way to get back to her son, the only way is declaring Harry dead. So they go back into the castle and, you know,
show Harry.
Yeah.
Now, like Matt was saying, the Cruciatus curse does not affect Harry. And the bucket says, yet the pain he expected did not come. What actually goes on here? Why did it not hurt Harry? Is there a simple way to explain this, or is it not?
Well, I think it was essentially, I mean, at least what I get from it, it's that he's the master of the Elder Wand. And the wand's not going to act against its master.
Mm-hmm. But if he was the master of the Elder Wand, would he have been able to be killed too? Just like when Voldemort...
You're saying if Voldemort was the master?
Well, since Voldemort killed him and he still is the master of the Elder Wand, how did he die then?
Well, he didn't die.
Right, but now that he's awake and he's still the master of the Elder Wand, he can be killed by Avada Kedavra, but he can't be touched by a Cruciatus curse?
Well, wasn't
I think it has to do with the fact that he sacrificed himself. That's why no one can die after Harry sacrificed himself.
Well, I knew that everyone in the castle was protected by Harry's sacrifice, but then if Harry's sacrifice would save himself, that wouldn't Lily's sacrifice have saved herself? I'm kind of confused.
Well, no. She sacrificed herself and she died. He sacrificed himself and was brought back, but the charm still works.
I see. I'm still confused.
It is kind of confusing.
Because the thing is, for instance, they're able to... Well, they're not able to perform the Cruciatus curse on him. They do it, and they think it's supposed to be causing pain, and it doesn't have any effect on him, yet at the same time, they can lift him and throw him around using their wands. So
maybe it just doesn't work again using curses.
Or anything that deflicts pain to death. Because you can die from Cruciatus, can't you? Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe because at this point he's become the master of death.
Right.
Probably. Yeah. Like if he wants to withstand death, he can. Or it just doesn't affect him, maybe. Like if he wants to, you know, deflect anything.
Isn't the whole point that, like, the Elder Wand is not going to harm its true master?
And yeah, that's what I thought.
And Harry is its true master. And, you know, when Voldemort tries to place a curse on him, it's not going to have any effect.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike, on that.
Okay. Well, I just thought it was interesting how it works. It really is interesting. Mm-hmm. So moving along, Hagrid begins carrying Harry out of the forest with the Death Eater procession all around him. And this is really sad because just imagine what Harry's thinking. And it just makes me sick to my stomach. Or sorry, what Hagrid's thinking. It just makes me sick to my stomach to think the feelings that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Imagining that Harry's dead and like what Voldemort is about to do to the world.
Well, I just thought it was so sad when in the book it says how soft and, you know, shaking Hagrid's hands were when he was cradling Harry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, Hagrid brought, I mean, Hagrid had Harry cradling him as a baby going to the Dursleys.
Exactly.
Yeah, now he's, oh, yeah, parallel. What's up?
Oh,
that's
and
so
Hagrid
true.
Was crying at both times, too. Saying goodbye to Harry in the beginning and saying yeah. goodbye to Harry in the
oh, wow, I never thought of that. Oh, so that is sad. Laura, are you crying now?
Shut up, Andrew.
You are?
No,
you are?
No, I'm not. Of course
Laura's
not.
Crying. Add the tally
Laura,
up.
Laura.
I have like a wall the size of the Great Wall of China, and I still can't fit all the tallies.
Laura, if it makes you feel better, I cried in this chapter, too.
Aww.
I cried for like the last four chapters of the book, so.
Yeah.
Dang, we should have done this live at Portis, and then we could see all the crybabies, who the yeah. crybabies are in this group. I bet Mike is crying right now. Mike, do you have your mic muted or something? You're not even talking.
No, I'm okay.
Nah, I'm okay.
No, I'm good.
No, really, I'm fine. Anyway.
What struck me is kind of kind of funny, and I don't think it was meant to be, was when Hagrid was carrying Harry, and then all of a sudden, Hagrid just bellows out to Bane,
Bane! You cowardly nerd!
So Voldemort magnifies his voice so all of Hogwarts can hear that Harry Potter is dead. And now this is another thing that made me sick. I should have thrown up. I was reading this at Panera. I probably should have thrown up my delicious smokehouse turkey sandwich.
Better not. I gave you that for free.
It said he was killed as he ran away, trying to save himself while you down your lives for him. We bring you his body as proof that your hero is gone. It just makes me sick that Voldemort had to say he ran away trying to save himself.
It's almost fruitless, though. Like, they would believe that. Like, anyone would believe that Harry Potter did that.
Yeah, do you think they did believe him?
No.
No. Not for a second. The crowd, not for a minute, believed anything he said, except for the fact that Harry was dead.
Well, yeah, and I mean, if he ran away, chances are, you know, he wouldn't have gone through the forest where he knew Voldemort was.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, moving along, after Voldemort announces that, we hear McGonagall giving a deafening shout, no! And this was a side of McGonagall that Harry had never seen or heard before. And then afterwards, it's even a more heartbreaking cries of Ron, Hermione, and Ginny just screaming, Harry, no, no. And this is where I started crying in the chapter, especially when I was reading McGonagall screaming no, because we all know how McGonagall feels towards Harry. She has like a certain kind of motherly affection towards Harry, not as much as Molly Weasley, but you know, in McGonagall's own certain way. I mean, she had a soft spot for Harry, and when she saw him, you know, her world just crashed down. I think it was a more deafening blow, or a bigger blow of Harry dying than it was for even Dumbledore's death.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is the hope for their entire world.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm with you. That whole part where it's talking about Ron, Hermione, and Ginny running down and screaming his name, just utterly heartbreaking. Even though you know Harry's alive, just yeah. putting yourself in that position and imagining yourself running and seeing your best friend and thinking they're dead.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, just think, I mean, think of how hard this is for Harry to keep his composure, too,
yeah.
during this entire little, you know, episode.
Yeah, because he was saying that he wanted so hard to call back to them, but he knew he couldn't.
Yeah.
I think it would be so cool if this book suddenly took the perspective of Ron and Hermione, and we as readers don't know yet that Harry actually was alive. It would just be, what an experience that would be as a reader, too. Really feel the pain and emotion that his best friends are actually feeling.
Yeah.
I actually think it's possible, too, if we go from, like, is it third person?
Hmm?
Where you see everyone's thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah. If we just see, if we read the entire chapter from a third person perspective after Harry comes back from, you know, the dead, you know, it's a good transition.
Yeah.
If that were to happen.
Or it just leaves off at Dumbledore saying, well, it's up to you whether you go or come back.
Yeah, and then we don't know what really happened.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and then that we as readers experience it. And, like, if we were reading this and, like, we saw Harry coming up in Hagrid's arms, we're like, what the hell? Why isn't he woken up yet? And then we could see that he saves the day by, you know, coming to life exactly when he needs to.
You know, all they have to do in the movie is just cut out that part where Narcissa and Harry talk.
They should do that. They really should.
Yeah, if they don't, if they cut out that little snippet of Harry saying, yes, and the audience just know the audience doesn't know if he's alive or not,
right?
Because Dumbledore left him a pretty much, you know, an ultimatum: go this way or that way.
They'll probably like adjust it in the film though, so you know which he chooses. It's gonna be like a door A, door B thing. Like,
oh my God!
Signs above them: live, die.
And you know what? It's not true to the book, so to speak, but I would be actually for it if they actually do that. I wouldn't care.
And imagine just like the part when Hagrid goes, where'd Harry go? Harry, where's Harry? You know, where's his dead body? Mm-hmm. That'd be so good. Why didn't we get to experience that?
I don't know. I think if the book had been like that, I would have been curled up in the fetal position on the floor. Like,
you were.
No, I wasn't.
You were already in a bad spot.
I'm just kidding.
You were so mean.
I love digging into Laura about that.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Laura.
All right. Well, moving on from this. I don't want to talk about this part anymore.
So Hagrid lays Harry at Voldemort's feet, and this is an awesome part. Another awesome part. Neville comes face to face with Voldemort and rebels. Voldemort puts him in the body bind curse. And in what is an amazing scene, Neville breaks free, pulls the sword out of the sorting hat, which comes down courtesy. Does it just come out of nowhere? I forget what happens.
It comes Voldemort, out of the hat because
yeah. No, but how does the hat get there?
Voldemort summons it.
Okay, well, so, yeah, Voldemort.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because Voldemort was going to make a little example out of him saying,
yeah,
that from now on, everyone's going to be in Slytherin.
Right. So Neville pulls the sword out of the hat and cuts off Nagini's head, which is awesome.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised that Voldemort gave Neville a chance to become a Death Eater right off the bat. I mean, he could have just said, you know what? Just die. But no, he says, wow, you have really nice blood. We can use a person like you. How would you like to be a Death Eater?
Well, yeah, because Voldemort was like, let's show everyone an example of what happens when you rebel. And I was like, oh, okay, death. When you go against Voldemort, you die.
But no, he sets him on fire. That's his. Yeah. Yeah, it's a nice little, you know, sub.
Yeah. So the chaos begins again. And as I described it in our notes, the Battle of Hogwarts all over again begins because it's just chaos everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, the chaos starts because the centaurs come back or come forward.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is really cool.
Yeah, and then we get to see Buckbeak!
Yeah.
And the Thestral's right behind him.
Yeah.
That's going to be an awesome scene to see.
Yeah.
Because I love reading that part in the chapter. It's just Buckbeak just coming out of the forest again.
Yeah, that'll be so cool. Seeing all the creatures come to life again.
Yeah. Well, this whole chapter is just full of cameos, too.
Yeah. So then the classic line that was recited by Mikey B throughout our summer tour, "Not my daughter, you bitch!" That, of course, was Molly Weasley saying that to Bellatrix, and Molly kills Bellatrix.
Well, you just skip like one of the biggest
scenes. Go ahead, set it all up.
Okay, the fight ends up in the Great Hall. It ends up going to the Great Hall of Hogwarts, and it ultimately comes down to two big battles, and it's Voldemort against three people, which is Kingsley... McGonagall, Kingsley, and Slughorn against Voldemort, and then it's Bellatrix against Hermione, Ginny, and Luna, and then Bellatrix shoots a killing curse at Ginny and just barely misses her by an inch, which to me means that if Harry didn't sacrifice himself, Ginny would have been dead. The reason that she's protected by that by the protective charm, but After that happens, Mrs. Weasley comes in, takes off her cloak, pulls out her wand, and goes, "Oh no, you didn't!" And then they go on the battle, and then it's pretty much just all of a sudden, just like everyone else who's fighting just stops and then just moves to the walls and just watches it. It's pretty much like in those movie scenes where the two main couple are slowly dancing in, at prom, and just everyone just stops dancing for some reason and just watches them. Because they all know what's going on.
Yeah, and I like the part you brought up, too, about the protective charms. It wasn't just Ginny. I mean, you go through, like, a page of this chapter where all these Death Eaters are just getting the crap kicked out of them. Nothing is having any effect on the sort of the good side, so to speak. And, you know, Harry later explains it when he's dueling Voldemort. He's like, don't you see that my protective charm is, you know, is doing its job? All your people are falling at the hands of, you know, the Ministry and the Order of the Phoenix and everybody else that seems to show up.
Yeah.
But what about, you know, we didn't even talk about the House Elves, how they entered the picture. And
have they entered yet, though?
I thought they did. I thought they come in before
Molly
Weasley thing.
Yeah, they did.
Oh, wow.
Talk about that, Micah.
Yeah, that's awesome, too.
I just thought it was like, this is one of my favorite scenes when you just see Creature running in.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about fighting in the name of Harry, fighting in the name of Regulus. And, you know, it's. I think that's going to be an awesome scene, and I really do hope that they...
I actually giggled the first time I read this part in the chapter. It was... I giggled. I mean, I was like... I was really giddy during this part, because it's just... You get to see the House Elves kick butt. And it's, I've always wanted to see, you know, the House Elves in some action. And this is just giving us what we want.
It's the Battle of Hogwarts.
And Creature just saying, fight, fight for my master, defender of House Elves. Fight the Dark Lord in the name of the brave Regulus. Fight!
Yeah.
But he also says it in that real low bubble voice.
I kind of see them as making this somewhat cheesy in the movie.
Yeah, but
even if it's in the movie, though, I mean, because we know that the House Elves are really expensive.
True. That we won't have any House Elves in the movie.
Yeah, well, not just them. I mean, this whole scene, though, it should be one of just, you know, that Voldemort's reign of terror is coming to an end. I mean, Matt, you talked before, like the centaurs, and then you have Grop and Buckbeak making their appearances, the House Elves, and they even mentioned the shopkeepers and homeowners of Hogsmeade.
Yeah.
You know, join the
fight. Well, see, if they were to cut anything from this big scene in the chapter, it would have to be the House Elves, because in the movies, they never really talked about it. They never talked anything about the House Elves at Hogwarts. So it would just probably be like Buckbeak and the Thestrals, and just pretty much anything that we've already seen is making a cameo. I mean, I'm sure we'll see like Creature just coming out, you know, just start fighting with a big, you know, butcher knife, which I personally don't mind seeing that. But
yeah, this should be a really cool scene, and I hope that they just do it justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they will, and now I feel like they know there's a much bigger expectation to do it right with the split.
Well, now that they said they're going to try to make it as right as possible.
We want to do it, and we want to give it justice. Yeah, well, prove it to us.
Yeah.
Give us two trailers, two premieres, two everything.
Right. How long is going to be?
Hmm?
How long screen-wise do you think it's going
to be? Since they're going to be splitting it, I'm pretty sure they're saving a lot of time for this big scene, because this is ultimately the climactic scene in the entire series. This is, I mean, the death of Voldemort.
Yeah. Well, what are you talking about? This specific part,
I mean,
or just
the whole
chapter?
The whole climactic area, I think. I mean, starting essentially from when they arrive at the Hogshead. I just think that that's going to have to take up so much screen time for it to do complete justice to it, you know?
Yeah.
Honestly, though, I don't really mind if they shorten any of these scenes, as long as they keep this one in nice, fluid length. You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can understand if they want to take out some of the information on, like, Ariel. Or, wait, what's...
Ariana.
Ariana's death and everything. I can understand that, because it's not really relevant to Harry's journey, so to speak. I mean, it kind of is, but I mean, it doesn't directly affect him. So I think they might, you know, sway away from that. But I'm just I think every single one of these, I'm sure Warner Brothers knows that every single one of the fans of Harry Potter are really looking forward to this scene more than anything. So they're going to have to spend a lot of, they're going to be really attentive to every single detail of this, even if it's not even last, it doesn't even get on the cutting, it loses on the cutting room floor. They're going to keep a lot of attention to this.
They better.
After Mrs. Weasley kills Bellatrix, Voldemort lets out a huge wail and attempts to kill Mrs. Weasley. However, Harry casts a shield charm on her, and that's when he reveals himself. When Harry reveals himself to everyone that he's not, in fact, dead, but he's alive.
Right.
And
I wanted to ask a question here, but because Voldemort lets out this cry, I mean, supposedly Voldemort doesn't feel any sort of compassion for anybody. Or do you think it's just
well? It's said in the book that he was. It's said in the book that Bellatrix was his, you know, his last lieutenant,
right?
In command, whether or not he had any feelings for her, she was like second in command. Like he trusted her, and he knows that she will follow him to the end. And now that she's gone, he's pretty much, you know, alone,
right?
Which isn't really a problem for him, but I mean It is a blow because it's almost like his partner in crime.
Yeah. Well, there's really no one left who has that sort of fanatical devotion towards him anyhow. So
right. There's no one who really has his back. Like if everyone's ganged up on him, Narcissa would be there, you know, covering his back in that situation, but that's just not the case anymore.
So Voldemort emphasizes to the crowd that Harry has made it this far because it's all been a series of accidents. And you know, Voldemort is really stunned at this point that Harry's even still alive. So I think he's just grasping for straws here. And Harry begins explaining to Voldemort how stupid he was and how he screwed up the flaw in the plan. Do you guys think it was a series of accidents? Or do you think that, because I mean, Harry does come back and say, you know, oh, he lists all these things that weren't accidents. Do you think they were? Cause he does seem to always have something there to help him out, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, it also seems to throw, I don't know if fate is the right word, or even faith, but it seems to kind of throw out the suggestion that he was supposed to, that there was some kind of other guiding influence, whether that be a god or any kind of other power that exists in this wizarding world that was guiding him towards winning. At least that's the impression I got, because Harry's just saying, you know, you think this is an accident, you think it's an accident that this happened and this happened, so it just seems like there was some other guiding force.
Well, I think it was an accident. I think both Voldemort and Harry's right. I think it was an accident, and I think Voldemort was stupid, because I think all the accidents are Voldemort's fault.
That's true.
Voldemort's the one that had all the accidents. He's the one who killed him like 300 or 400 times.
No, you're right.
And it all backfired.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, like, from Harry, it's a very different perspective than you get from him in Order of the Phoenix, where he's standing in the Hogshead, you know, basically telling these people who want to join the fight that, you know, all this stuff was just basically dumb luck. And now here you are having him talk to Voldemort and saying, you know what, it wasn't an accident that this happened, that my mother protected me, or, you know, any other of the events that took place. So, I mean,
it's not really, I mean, if Voldemort hadn't gone after Lily, he wouldn't have been shot down. So, I mean, every single thing that happens is pretty much Voldemort's fault, because Voldemort's always the instigator in these events.
He just can't leave it alone, can he? It's all his fault.
He just can't go home. He just can't go home, take off his robe, and watch Friends.
Well, it's true, though, because the prophecy says so long as one of them tries to instigate it, it's going to keep going.
Okay, so while reading the dialogue between Harry and Voldemort,
oh yeah,
it was very intriguing, and it really makes you sit on the edge of your seat. And I think as a tribute to the books, this final battle scene where Harry keeps addressing Voldemort as Tom Riddle, Warner Brothers, I think, should just use the script verbatim, because I think it would work really well in the movie. It moves back and forth a lot. There's a lot of anger and emotion you can put into the actors. Yeah. What do you guys think? Wouldn't that be cool if it was just word for word?
It would be cool, but wouldn't like every single big speech be cool if it was verbatim, word for word?
But this is the biggest of big speeches.
But I don't know. With speeches involved in the films, I don't have any faith in, because I just know I'm just going to get let down. So I'm not really going to go with high hopes for that speech being word for word.
It would be pretty long and pretty detailed and pretty deep for what they usually do for a movie, these Harry Potter movies, but I just feel like it would be so cool.
Yeah.
Just finish the movies for once with Joe's writing instead of making it into your own.
Yeah. What I'm really afraid of is that they're going to try and explain everything about the Elder Wand in 2 minutes, you know.
Then they're going to explain the Marauders, too.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, my dad wrote this map.
Oh, by the way, my dad's a stag. That's why I thought it was my dad in Prisoner of Azkaban, man. In case any of you people didn't really know that.
Yeah. And make Voldemort throw some more water balls at him.
Yeah.
And all those little sound effects. And make the glass fall. All those cool, like, not.
Oh, and by the way, Fleur and Bill, they got married.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just cut that scene from the movie. That's why. You don't.
Oh, and by the way, I'm trying to liberate house elves.
And that locket that was supposed to be in Order of the Phoenix? Yeah, we just, we're going to make that appear somehow in the sixth movie.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Creature was actually cleaning the portrait of Sirius's mom, but apparently she screams every time someone comes in through the door.
That's too much money.
It's not really. Yeah, it's just not that important.
Oh, man.
And Dobby was actually in more than the second movie. So, yeah.
The last 5 minutes of movie 7 will be recounting.
Oh, by the way, Dobby gave me the Dobby gave me some gillyweed, but we decided to get Neville.
Yeah, that's right. But
funny.
No, keep it all in. That's what I agree.
Keep
I
it
agree
all in.
What
yeah.
Matt said.
I mean, the more the merrier. But
well, no, because I just think it has a cool progression to it. Like Andrew was saying, he refers to him as Tom a lot, and you know, he's like saying, you know what, your plan was completely messed up. Your Horcruxes, they're gone.
Right, right,
yeah,
exactly.
I do agree with you guys, though. This has a lot of potential because this is really the where Harry actually is more, you know, confident talking to Voldemort. We don't really have any Harry-Voldemort, you know, dialogue in the films. It's basically in Goblet of Fire when, you know, Voldemort was just talking and then all Harry just did was say,
it's flinch.
Your way.
Yeah, that's all he does.
Yeah.
You're right. That's true. Every bit of dialogue we've ever had between Harry and Voldemort involves Voldemort moving around like a snake and Harry flinching every 2 seconds.
And crying.
Yeah.
And
you're possessing
yelling.
Me. Yeah.
But it's just...
I feel sorry for you.
It's just a complete breakdown. I mean, he's basically just breaking down the mindset of Voldemort. He's like, you know what, Snape? He was on our side. You know, the Elder Wand, you have no
How
idea.
About that?
It really belonged to Draco Malfoy, and so I'm its true master.
This was really fun to read. He's like shooting down every single thing that Voldemort says. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Oh, but it does.
He's
it kind of does. You know what? You're screwed. Give me your wand.
So finally, Harry says he knows the moment's going to happen at any moment, and Voldemort fires Avada Kedavra. Harry fires the signature Expelliarmus, and Voldemort's spell backfires, and he's dead.
Yep,
that's it. It all comes down to that one spell. After all this Horcrux hunting and everything else, it comes down to that.
And Voldemort's wand flies out of his hand into Harry's, right?
Oh yeah. So. The scene on the cover occurs right here.
Oh, yeah.
In the book, it says, as Voldemort fell backwards, arms splayed, the slit pupils of the scarlet eyes rolling upward. Why didn't we ever speculate that Voldemort was falling backwards? Because, like, if you look at the cover
really
again...
It doesn't really look like it, though. Not...
But it can't... But
yeah,
look
it looks
at
like...
it again right now. It looks like he is, because his sort of... It's hard to tell, because he's wearing that big-ass
cloak.
Yeah, and
he also looks like the Grinch. But, I mean...
Yeah, I mean...
No, I mean, okay, and I hate to rant here, and we've talked about this on the show before, but I really feel that the American cover was extremely misleading. I really do. In terms of location, it does not look like the Great Hall.
It actually does. It looks exactly like it was supposed to, because the sky was supposed to be golden from the sun coming up.
Okay, that's it. But yeah. How about the arches all around? Like, it looks like a coliseum. We talked about that. They're in a coliseum. I'm so
well. It's not real. The ceiling. It's bewitched to look like the night sky.
No, but the thing is, isn't the Great Hall supposed to be rectangular? It was always described.
Yes.
And then here you've got these circular walls. It makes
it's a
no
bowl.
Sense. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're walking in a circle. Maybe that's trying to signify that they've been going in a circle. And then the Great Hall has been changing because it's getting kind of dizzy from the walking around in circles.
I don't know. But then you look at this rubble and, like, where the rocks come from?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, the ground is stone, but...
And the wood. Like, isn't there wood,
even,
too?
It doesn't even look like Voldemort's flying back. It looks like he's reaching.
Yeah.
But look at the angle at the front of his cloak. See how... Just look at the angle at how the front of his cloak is slanted backwards.
Well, it doesn't even have the wand in his hand.
I guess.
But the other thing is that he's reaching out to, like, grab it.
We'll see what we...
But the reason he's reaching out is because he's falling backwards. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, Harry doesn't even have his wand in his hand. He has no wands, period.
He's reaching up.
Yeah, no, but look at his right hand.
Yeah, it's on a rock.
Where's Draco's wand?
Oh.
Yeah. And see, this was what threw us off, because initially we were speculating that this had something to do with wandless magic.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that Harry's not even holding a wand here, I think that fuels the fire.
Yeah, I agree.
You have some explaining to do, Mary Grand Prix. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, really.
What book did you read?
No wonder she's not doing any interviews. She doesn't want to. She's going back. I know. No thanks. Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder if they give any kind of instruction to the artists in order not to give too much away.
They obviously give her enough information.
Well, she gets to read the book. I mean...
Well, not only does she get to read the book, but doesn't the picture have to be approved, too?
I would assume so.
Yeah, but I don't think they would ever tell Mary Grand Prix to start from scratch again.
Well, no, they just say, can you just add a wand to Harry's right hand, please? While he's reaching up. I mean,
because, you know, this is the final battle scene, and generally you need a wand.
Yeah.
God, we are such dissenters tonight. We have trashed the movies, and now we're trashing the book cover.
I know.
What's wrong with us?
What's next?
We just have high expectations.
Yeah. All right. Well, we apologize for being so negative on the cover, but I think we do bring up valid points. I mean, and I'm sure everyone agrees. I mean, it's not the it's not the most accurate cover. It did throw us off.
And
but,
some of our negative points, we're just trying to be funny, too.
No, but I'm sure people are mad. No. So then what I think is, and we'll jump back to the movies now, the awesome movie scene that I may be crying at if they do it. In the book, it was described as all around the walls, the headmasters and headmistresses of Hogwarts were giving him a standing ovation.
I cried here, too.
This is talking about Harry. He's walking into Dumbledore's office.
I did.
If Matt's crying right now. I don't think
no,
he is.
I didn't cry. I did cry out of both eyes.
Whoa,
and that's
both
a lot
eyes.
For a guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can just cry out of one eye, but okay. So he's walking in there, and the portraits are giving him a standing ovation. And then Harry talks to Dumbledore's portrait. And we had discussions on how much help Dumbledore's portrait could be, because that could play a factor. And we see here what a couple of us did speculate back last year, way back when, that this is Dumbledore's personality coming through. He doesn't provide Harry with any new information. They're just simple responses to what Harry was saying.
Yeah.
And they're kind of clever. They're kind of funny, not really, but...
Well, it was pretty obvious, too, because Harry had to think about how to say the words correctly, you know?
Right.
He was thinking about what to say and how to say it, so it would get the right response.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, also, he was trying to be secretive, too, to the others, but...
Yeah.
Right, because he didn't want anyone to go find the Resurrection Stone.
Exactly.
Right. So,
well, I don't know. I mean, I thought the interaction between the two of them suggested that maybe there was a little bit more reality to their meeting at King's Cross than we initially thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it's the same thing that, you know, it's Dumbledore's reflection of Harry. That maybe, you know, the portrait changes manner depending on who the person the portrait is talking to.
Could be.
Yeah, that very well could be.
The only other thing I wanted to bring up in this chapter was that, you know, we talked about this, I don't know how many times on different episodes, but, you know, when McGonagall goes to set all the house tables, but everybody sort of ends up sitting together no matter the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really cool, too.
That is cool.
This shows the unity that was created after all that, so... and that was it for the chapter, unless anyone else wants to bring something else up.
Well, we got to talk...
We have to talk about the last sentence of Book 7, I mean.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, we get to see a little bit... Luna actually is in the very end of the book, almost, which I thought was kind of cute. We get to see a little bit of Luna, and we get to see some of Neville, and we get to see some closure on a lot of the characters, like Ginny's holding her head onto Mrs. Weasley because her mother just... saved her life.
Well, and her mother also just lost a son, too.
Well, that too, of course. But
so, Laura, what is the last line of the book?
Well, it's after Harry decides that he doesn't want to possess the Elder Wand, and Ron's actually kind of surprised by this, because, of course, Ron wants it. And he says, "The wand's more trouble than it's worth." And then he talks about wanting to go lay down in bed. And then the very last sentence is, "I've had enough trouble for a lifetime." And that's just, it's so bittersweet when you read it. It's like, oh no, this is the end.
Oh, it's over.
But no, it's really telling too, because he really has.
Yeah.
It's a really good ending though, I think.
Yeah. I think I probably cried when I read that too.
Oh, well, I didn't cry when I read that because, you know, I'm a man.
Right. Yeah. Were you guys disappointed that the last word wasn't Scar?
No.
No.
I didn't even remember that. I didn't even
But I was
that.
Looking forward to that so much. I wanted to be able, like, I would have felt complete closure then if I read the word Scar, because for the longest time, J.K. Rowling was like, yeah, it's going to end with Scar. Final word's going to be Scar.
But, I mean, if she found out that it didn't flow as well and she had to change it, I'd rather it end on a nice, you know, note than having her to rewrite, you know, to have it just say Scar at the end.
Well, doesn't it? I mean, Scar is in the last sentence of the epilogue.
Yeah,
not to jump ahead, but possibly maybe that's where she used it initially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there was an interview with her about it, and I'm pretty sure she said, you know, she decided to just forget about it. So, I don't know. I was a tad disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Yeah, some fans are disappointed and some weren't. I mean, you can't please them all.
That kind of reminds me, I don't know, Andrew, if you saw it, but when we were walking back from Waterstones when the book was released, these three women stopped me on the side of the street and they go, "Can you please open your book?" And, you know, we had people jumping at us as we were leaving the bookstore, and I'm like, oh God, what do they want? And they're like, we just want to know what the first word of Book 7 is. So I open it and the first word is "the." These poor women were so disappointed. They were like, oh, and they swore a lot. But yeah. I just thought it was cute.
I don't know if I ever said the story on the show, but we were leaving the bookstore and somebody tried to swipe the book right out of Jamie's hands when he wasn't looking.
I had some guy jump out of the line at me.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh my God, don't kill me, please.
Yeah, that is scary.
And then we had that German TV station. Were you there with us? Yeah. That was crazy.
So that does wrap up chapter by chapter. Wow, I can't believe, we're not even finished, really. We still have the epilogue.
Yeah.
But, huh.
It's bittersweet, though.
Yeah, I don't know what to say right now.
I know.
It's a bittersweet...
Wait, we didn't play a song
symphony.
For Voldemort.
Oh,
right! Oh, yeah. What song we should play?
Or
should we play for Voldemort?
Yeah.
Or Bellatrix.
Ding dong,
should we just
the witch
do a two for one deal?
No. Voldemort gets his own. All right, so we got a little tribute to the death of Bellatrix. And here we go. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed, I'm your hell, I'm your dream. I'm nothing in between, you know you wouldn't want it any other way. So take me as I am. This may mean you'll have to be a stronger man. Let's just
sure that when I start to make you nervous and I'm going to extremes, tomorrow I will change and today won't mean a thing. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm your hell, I'm your dream.
Who is that song by now?
Right,
what was
the
name?
It's entitled I'm a Bitch by Meredith Bush.
Now, do we have one for Voldemort that's like, I'm a jackass? So this was Laura's idea. Laura, let's see what you came up with here. Alright, that wasn't very nice. I mean, the poor guy's, well, dead.
Well, I'm okay. Let me clarify.
I can just imagine Laura coming up to Voldemort's body and saying that. Ha ha, you're dead.
I just kidding,
I would
Laura.
Never do that.
He deserves that song.
We're going to get so many angry emails.
Oh, I hope not. If they do.
I think it's funny. I don't see why there's anything wrong with that.
If you think Voldemort deserves a nice song, email us with a good song to use for a nice song to recognize him. Who would want to recognize him? Ha ha. You're dead. All right. Well, in celebration of wrapping up all the chapters of this final book, we're going to do favorites this week. We're going to do favorite chapter in book 7.
Hmm.
Now that we're finished with it, mm-hmm. and since the epilogue doesn't really count, we'll just go around the table and everyone can say what their favorite chapter was in this book. I'll go first. Seven Potters was my favorite chapter. And I said during our chapter by chapter on that chapter, that just by reading the title, I knew it was going to be really cool. And especially seeing the, actually, I didn't see the chapter art for that because I was reading the UK edition. But just reading that title, you know something cool is going to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was just so clever having seven Harry Potters to screw up Voldemort and the Death Eaters in figuring out which Harry is actually the real one. I just loved how clever that was. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. I think my favorite chapter, and this is really a toss-up because there are a couple that I love, but it would have to be chapter 16, Godric's Hollow. I just loved actually getting to see Godric's Hollow through Harry's eyes, and the whole scene where he and Hermione were at the cemetery was just, it really tugged at your heartstrings. And I really enjoyed discussing the different biblical quotes that were present on, I believe, Kendra Dumbledore's grave and then Lily and James, their tombstones. So I found it a very bittersweet chapter just because that's been a place we've been waiting to see for so long, and then we ended up mm-hmm. seeing it under those circumstances. So,
I actually really liked chapter 33, The Prince's Tale. Everything finally coming together. We finally get to see that Snape wasn't the bastard that everybody made him out to be throughout the first six books.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a redemptive chapter for him. And it wasn't just him. I mean, you got to see the entire plot unfold that you were kind of blind to for the past, you know, seven and change, you know, or six and change books. And it's just, you know, it was. I thought it was a really great chapter. I thought, you know, and you didn't know really what was going to happen next. You thought that really Harry had to go and die for the greater good. And I don't know. I just liked that chapter a lot.
The chapter that I probably would say is my favorite is chapter 31, The Battle of Hogwarts, only because every time I've read this book, that chapter has always gotten me the most excited to read. I have never been able to, you know, to even take a break from reading that chapter. the adrenaline, it's really when the adrenaline finally kicks in. It's what I have been hoping for the entire series, is the ultimate battle at Hogwarts. And it's just the preparation, especially when Flitwick was getting prepared for the battle, and you know, just the interaction between Harry and McGonagall and everything. It's just awesome.
Okay, well, that does it for chapters and our chapters favorites, and chapter by chapter. We're going to do one more segment here today and then begin to wrap things up. Chicken soup, not exactly chicken soup edition. Sorry, I don't have any sound effects today. My computer's in the shop.
Chicken soup for your soul.
Not exactly chicken soup edition. Who wants to read it?
How about Laura? Because she's got the female voice.
Yeah.
So our chicken soup comes from Victoria, age 15, of Toronto, Canada. She writes, "I think I submitted this to the wrong place. My apologies. My school had a talent show, and I signed up to sing a song from, drumroll, the Remus Lupins. I learned the song, and on the day of the show, I brought my laptop into school so I could sing along to the music. But the person controlling the music accidentally clicked the song before it, which consequently was MuggleCast 58. And it, it skipped to a part where Andrew is repeatedly saying, pickles. Oh, man. Everyone laughed.
Oh, I think it was the one where I went, pickles, 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 yeah. Pickles, 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 pickles. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Everyone laughed, including some of the teachers, and it was definitely better than anything I could have sang. Wow. Well, it's good that you weren't embarrassed, because I think if that had happened to me, I probably would have killed Andrew.
Oh, I get embarrassed. I can't listen to the show around anyone
else.
No,
oh, me neither. I hate it. Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, scary. Well, thank you for that, Victoria. It's time to remind everyone about our contact information one last time before our live show in Portis.
Laura, if anyone wanted to send anything to us, where would they send it?
It's P.O. Box 3151, Cumming, Georgia, 30028. Don't worry, I am getting your stuff, and I'm going to give it to everyone next week at Portis. So they've all got a lot of mail.
Word has it that there are a lot of... there's a couple umbrellas for Mikey.
Yeah, one of them came the other day. I did get an umbrella
for Mikey.
One came
the other day.
Yes.
Okay, make sure you bring that. I will bring it to Mikey, and we will... shoot. All right. We skipped voicemail this week, but we will try to get back to them in a couple weeks. By the way, at the MuggleCast meetup, one of the ideas is to record some voicemails, quote unquote, that we can play during the show. So if you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20 Magic. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5068. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just remember, no matter how you call us, leave your message under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible, please. Also, on MuggleCast.com, we have a handy feedback form to contact any one of us, or just use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Don't forget, at MuggleCast.com, we have a variety of community outlets, including the MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last.fm, and the fan listing and the forums over at MuggleCastFan.net. You can follow us on Twitter, DigTheShow at Dig.com, and vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley.
You can also find us at TwilightSource.com.
Oh, Laura, no. Laura, I'm going to cut that out now. I'm going to cut it out.
No, you're not.
I won't really cut it out. Yeah. Well, Micah, Laura, I'll see you both at Portis next week.
Yeah. We'll see everybody else at Portis too. We will see you.
We'll see
there.
Jim Dale there too. I heard he's coming.
Yeah,
he's coming.
That's right.
I hear there's never been a bigger celebrity coming to Portis or a Harry Potter symposium.
Yeah.
Besides us, I mean.
Yeah, I was
waiting
for you to say
something. I'm just kidding. No, it's going to be very exciting to have such an influential person in the Potter fandom there.
Oh, God, I'm so excited to go.
Me too. I can't wait to see you guys.
I can't wait to see everybody. I mean, I'm just so excited.
I can't wait to play pranks on you guys in the hotel rooms. Like, you wake up and you'll have weird shapes on your forehead in permanent marker.
Mm-hmm. Remember, I can throw you across the room, Andrew. Probably with one hand.
What? Okay. What are you talking about? You want to fight? I'll fight you there. We'll record it.
Oh, that'll be priceless. Put it on the site. We'll put that on Pickle Pack, the first piece of footage there in like 10 years.
Yeah, maybe we should record something new for them.
Yeah, we should.
Possibilities are endless. Next week's episode will be a live recording from our podcast at Portis. And we don't know what we're going to talk about yet, but I promise you it'll be fun.
It'll be a little bit about the epilogue, and I really... We're going to do something with the audience.
Yeah, we'll do
We'll probably we'll decide about questions. 5 minutes before we go on.
Yeah, I mean, you're not kidding.
Like, you know what? How about this? How about we don't even really discuss the epilogue? We just have the audience come up and just bring stuff up about the epilogue.
Matt, you bring up a good point. If you're going to Portis and you're listening to this now, come there with good questions to ask about the epilogue or just Harry Potter in general. And we'll call people up to ask questions and such.
Yeah.
Good idea. All right. So with that, I am Andrew Sims.
I'm Laura Thompson.
I'm Micah Tenenbaum.
And I'm Matt Britton.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you next week live from Portis for episode 153. Bye-bye.
See you guys next week.
Yeah.
Laura, did you get your internet back?
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, obviously you do, because you're online.
Hopefully I don't die tonight,
yeah,
apparently.
Get your internet back.
You know, I really think that there's some kind of, like, curse out against Elisa and myself, because for the past, what, 2 or 3 weeks, we've both been recording in storms. It's like, give me a break.
At least you're inside.
Well, I heard there are actually sirens in Dallas that go off. Is that true, Laura?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like tornado warning?
Oh,
things?
Yeah. We had one right down the street from us when I lived there.
We should, like, play a fake one and scare everyone.
Oh, no. You have no idea. Everyone will be in their bathtubs in, like, 2 seconds flat. You have no idea.
Why in the bathtubs?
Because they don't move. They're anchored. You lay in the bathtub and you put your mattress or some pillows over you.
Well, that doesn't do us any good if we're, like, on the 18th floor of the Hilton Anatole, does it?
I don't know if we're that high up. You know what's great, though?
Oh my gosh, we can see tornadoes in Texas, can't we?
You know what's great, though? Okay, you know you guys have pretty much lived in your respective parts of the countries most of your lives. And you have, like, various sorts of evacuation signs. Well, in Texas, they have a sign that has a tornado on it and a man running from it. And it's like, evacuation route this way. So
if you see this thing, run away.
So hopefully we don't die while we're out there. Anyway,
it's just gonna be hot.
Yeah, we got Jim Dale, you know.
We're good. Oh, it's gonna be hotter than the hinges of hell. Anyway.
I just wanted to point out a connection you may have missed from episode 151. In Prisoner of Azkaban on page 427, after Harry thinks he sees his father conjure a Patronus, I just wanted to point out a connection you may have missed from episode... Oh, shit.
What the hell?
It's kind of hard reading it from this angle. Okay.